This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider. Pete Sampson joined by Tim Priester, two-man booth today, previewing Michigan State, talking a little bit about the news of the week. It's been pretty heavy on Brandon Wimbush discussion without the benefit of talking to Brandon Wimbush or any of the wide receivers, which is, I think, a little bit of a surprise. But considering Wimbush got the game ball last week, I think it sort of tells you the perception and the questions about him around the program and Notre Dame sort of trying to run interference a little bit. Not that we expect to talk to him every single week, but after 200 yards and four touchdowns rushing, it's been interesting to sort of try to piece together about what Notre Dame wants to do offensively without talking to some of the major players involved in that.
Yeah, well, they knew that the focus on Wimbush would not be the 200 yards and four touchdowns. It would be the inefficiency passing the football, but yeah, it is the focus. I think Brian Kelly at one point said, look, I get all these questions that you're asking me this week. It's understandable. It's the nature of, it's the nature of the media more than anything. But, I said this in the tail of the tape early in the week, I certainly the passing game's a concern. There's no doubt about that, but it is the college game, not the NFL game. I think to a large extent, Notre Dame fans should be celebrating the abilities of Brandon Wimbush on the ground because, it's a huge aspect of their offense. If they can keep him healthy, it will remain a huge aspect of their offense. And Brian Kelly said on Tuesday that if teams are going to have their cornerbacks turn their back on our receivers, which is basically what Michigan State's going to do in their press man coverage, then Brandon Wimbush is going to run it. And I get it from a coach's standpoint. You can't coach a game. You have 12 regular season games. You can't coach a season with the number of hits on your quarterback at the forefront of your mind. It's something to consider, but you have to win football games. And so that's not at the forefront of Brian Kelly's mind. I get that. That's probably why Ian Book threw some passes, though, against Boston College, because he needs to be prepared.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how Kelly and Chip Long customized the passing game this weekend, because as I sort of dug into the numbers, looking at Wimbush compared to Kizer, and not just Wimbush compared to Kizer big picture, but like, okay, so where are the real differences? And if I wrote about this yesterday in my extra points column, that if you really look at the short stuff and the long stuff, the first three starts of Kizer in 2015 and the first three starts of Kizer in 2016 compared to where Wimbush is right now are very similar. Wimbush is not as accurate in short passes, and I define that anything from 5 yards and under, nor is he that accurate deep, which I define as more than 20 yards. But compared to Kizer, it's basically the same. Wimbush is in the low 70s for the short stuff. Kizer was in the mid to high, and in the deep stuff, Kizer was 33.3% 1 year, 37.5% 1 year, and I think Wimbush is sitting there at 35.7%. So if you look at going deep or going short, Wimbush is more than adequate to get the job done. The problem is the intermediate stuff has been abysmal, and that's where Wimbush right now is at 42.1% completion percentage, compared to Kizer's first year starting when he was at 59.3%, and his second year starting, these are just three game samples, when he was at 65.7%. So Notre Dame's offense is just not functional in an intermediate passing game. So what do you have to do with that? I think you have to take that out as much as you possibly can. And look, the intermediate passing game is in many ways, I think, the hardest of the three zones to hit, because you're throwing between people. You're not throwing beyond people or in front of people. And I talked to Jerm Smythe a little bit about that yesterday, and he said, yeah, that's... I sort of gave him my theory on that, and he's like, yeah, that's exactly right. It's hard to do, and you don't know if a guy's going to get it. And he referenced Kizer, actually. He was like, he came off the bench, and we're just like, okay, is this going to work?
So now what are we going
to
run?
And it did. It just worked right away. Yeah. With Wimbush, it hasn't worked right away, so they need to figure out something else.
Well, that's why DeShone Kizer's starting in the NFL as a rookie, or that's part of the reason he also plays for the Browns. But, I guess I was kind of glad to see that your stats backed up what I thought was happening. Because it does make sense. The intermediate routes are where the intricacies of routes are run. And so when you combine Wimbush's inaccuracy with the inexperience of Notre Dame's receivers and EQ not being able to get into his routes because they're being physical with him at the line of scrimmage, it all makes sense. I get it. And I don't, it doesn't matter really the experience or inexperience of your receivers. If a guy's throwing the ball way over your head or a guy's throwing the ball at your feet, it's usually the quarterback's issue. If the routes aren't being run at the correct depth, then that comes into play as well. But what do they do this weekend? I think zone option will remain a heavy part of what they do because Michigan State, if they're stout anywhere, it's in the middle of their defensive line and their linebackers. I like their linebackers. If they're inexperienced anywhere, which is basically everywhere because they have very few starts on this entire team coming into the season. But as it relates to the defensive front, their defensive ends are former walk-ons with very little experience. So you're going to put them in a position with your zone option offense to make those inexperienced defensive ends make decisions. I think this is something I suggested Monday in a tail of the tape. Tight end heavy offense. Maybe some jet sweeps. I had suggested Dexter Williams. CJ Sanders is an option there as well. I think that you have to... Michigan State's a physical defense. They're inexperienced, but they're a physical defense. They do not have the normal talent that they have had in the past at cornerback. So I think we continue to see Brian Kelly and Chip Long dig deep into the playbook and try to do a variety of things in the run game and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I do think that they're going to have to be creative in the run game and be more run heavy than they already have been. And I think people will be listening to this and be like, wait, they run all the time. This is they're running 75% of the time. It hasn't really shaken out that way. If you look at the first three starts of Crist, Reese, Golson, Kizer, and Wimbush has the second most pass attempts, which was surprising to me because my perception was that Notre Dame is running a lot. But Wimbush threw it 40 times against Georgia. I think he's 30 against Temple. I would like to see him attempt 23 passes on Saturday night. I think they would win if he
attempts 23 passes.
Yeah, if you can keep him under 25 attempts, then I think Notre Dame is going to be good. Now, that takes some real discipline on the part of the coaching staff, and I think to date they've actually done a pretty good job with that.
Well, it's also the flow of the game. I mean, if it's going like Georgia, which it won't, Michigan State's defense is not that good. If it's going like Georgia, you got to do something to spark the offense, so you have to put it up. But your point's well taken. At that 25 pass range is a good number if they could hit that.
Yeah, and in terms of what Michigan State does, they haven't given up an offensive touchdown all year. Now they've only played two games, and they've been against non-Power 5 teams, but that's significant. They're the only team in the country who can say that. And they're number one in the country on third down defense. They're only allowed 3 conversions in 28 attempts. Notre Dame is pretty good themselves. They're 16th, 13 of 51. But, I think it's going to be a fundamentally sound defense. I don't think you're going to have guys running all over the place wide open. Not that I'm necessarily confident Brandon Wimbush would find them. But I don't think you're going to have guys turn loose in the run game either. I think Notre Dame's really going to have to work hard to be effective in the run game. It's not going to be like Boston College. So
I agree with what you're saying there. As it relates to Michigan State's quarterback, Brian Lewerke, I think he is the most prepared of the four quarterbacks Notre Dame will have faced. But that isn't saying a lot. He'll be making his third career start. He's run a lot on scrambles. That's why he's leading them in rushing. He's run on, well, and the other thing is that Michigan State splits up their carries with their three running backs. But he was inaccurate in their first game. He was better in their second game. I know your insider talked about Michigan State's running game and the running backs. I think that's more an inexperienced offensive line than it is their running backs. LJ Scott fumbled once or twice, but he's still a good back. And Gerald Holmes gashed Notre Dame last year, and they have the third running back, Madre London. So they're going to use all those guys. They're going to do jet sweeps with their wide out like they did R.J. Shelton last year. They have a speedy guy in Stewart. Their offensive line, I don't think, is cohesive yet, although they have Brian Allen at center, and I think they do have a very talented right tackle, young right tackle in Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, their offensive line, it is basically as young as Notre Dame's line was a year ago.
Right.
Maybe even a little bit younger. They had at the start of the season, they had 40 career starts at that position. And just for perspective, 75 is a good number. Anything less than that, you really start to fall. 40 is basically nothing. And Brian Allen had 23 of those 40. So there, that to me is a real concern. And it's like you look at L.J. Scott, I think he was right at 100 yards on Notre Dame last year. And maybe Holmes was just below 100 yards. But L.J. Scott's, if you take out his 44-yard run, he's averaging 2.53 yards per carry. And that's
reflective of their offense.
Yeah, it has to be.
I mean, it's not okay, so he fumbled, but he's still L.J. Scott, and he's still a good back. So I think this is a great test for Notre Dame's defense against this rushing attack, as was Georgia, and they had some issues on their offensive line, too, and Notre Dame did a pretty good job against a two-headed monster. This will probably be three guys led by Scott. You know, when you look at this game, I mean, I think Notre Dame's more experienced. Notre Dame's deeper. Notre Dame's in a better position to win this football game. Now, they have to go on the road. A win at Boston College doesn't prove that they're ready to take on anybody on the road. So it's a huge challenge. What Michigan State lacks in experience, I think Mark D'Antonio and his staff kind of bridge that gap a little bit. I think he's a very good coach. He's very fundamental, and they're a very physical program overall, and you can see that in their defense.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, if I'm looking at the keys to the game for me, I'd say one we've already discussed is limit Brandon Wimbush in the passing game. Figure out a way to have a game plan where he throws it 25 times or less. I think some kind of stubbornness with the run game, those two things sort of go hand in hand, where you're getting Josh Adams 19 carries, but then I'm assuming Tony Jones is going to be out. We'll ask Brian Kelly about that today. But then Dexter Williams has to have legitimate carries, not fourth quarter carries. Like, give me 8 Dexter Williams carries real situations.
He's got to be involved in the game plan for 4 quarters, just when you feel like Josh Adams needs a break.
Yeah.
I think he needs to be involved from the beginning. Stop the run to me is at the top of the list, because then that makes Lewerke. I don't know what you can do about Lewerke scrambling for a couple first downs. He's mobile, and so he may do that. You have two young quarterbacks going head-to-head, which has basically been each of the first 3 games. I get that, but I see this as a lower-scoring game, and I think the turnovers by the quarterbacks, whichever quarterback turns it over the most, will be the losing quarterback. That's kind of how I look at it right now.
Yeah, and I think with the little worky concept, when I talked to Chris Solari from the Detroit Free Press for the sort of insider preview earlier in the week, he had sort of mentioned the concept of, like, you put a spy on the quarterback. I don't think Lewerke is athletic enough that you need to spy him. Just the natural speed of your linebackers will take care of that. Whereas I think Brandon Wimbush is athletic enough that could impact the structure of your defense, where if you don't do that, and I don't know if their middle linebacker is quite quick enough to do that. He's more of like a in the box, between the hashes type guy. Chris Fry is athletic enough to do it.
And Dowell plays a star position.
Dowell's a really good athlete. Yeah. So I think that I'm curious to see how that shakes out. Because I don't see Lewerke being so athletic that he's picking up 3rd and 8 with a 9-yard run. Maybe one time, but that's not going to be a real issue.
But even if he did it 3 times in the... I don't know which of the 2 games they're running together now, but I totally agree with you. I think it's more important that Notre Dame stops the Lewerke to name any young receiver that Michigan State has out there. rather than spy him. I think the coverage on the back end, even with your linebackers, is much more important than spying Lewerke. He may break a couple. He's pretty athletic. He can run. When he gets space, he's going to run, and he's going to get a first down on third and eight.
Yeah, and that you can stomach maybe one or two of those.
Yes,
you know. And then my last key for Saturday night, I think this is probably the first time I've ever said this. Certainly this season, maybe the last few. Notre Dame's defensive line needs to win its matchup with the opposing offensive line, and I think that they will. That's the first. I probably have said that they needed to win the matchup before, but I haven't really been confident that they would.
Right.
I'm kind of confident that they will. I think Notre Dame's defensive line has been that impressive, and I think Michigan's offensive line is that questionable.
They need to. I mean, to win the game, they need to win that battle, and that's why it's a good key on your part there. They need to win that, because if they don't, then the running game, you know, what Michigan State rushed for last year, 260 yards, and then a lot of that was on a long run by Holmes, but they have to win that. Again, they should win that. They're the more experienced defensive line. They've had good success in three games. And Michigan State's offense has bogged down, you know, through large portions of their first two games. So they need to win that. And I think the expectation is realistic that they will win it.
And I think one of the aspects of that is it's not just about getting pressure on Lewerke, but Notre Dame has been susceptible to some bad run fits this season, and they really got hurt when it happens. Jalen Elliott against Georgia comes to mind. If your defensive line is moving offensive linemen around, then there aren't really holes to fit necessarily. Like, it's just all gummed up. And because I think that's what happened with, I think it was Holmes last year who had the really long run. It was just like up the middle and go. Like, I don't know if it's Tavon Coney ran out of his gas.
Safety's nowhere in sight.
Safety's whatever. If your defensive line is owning the line of scrimmage, then that becomes less of an issue.
Yeah.
So I would like to see the defensive line provide some insurance for the back end of the defense. Not in the passing game, but in the running game.
Right. Now, the Notre Dame linebackers have to fit well in this game. There's no doubt about that. And they have at times, but not completely. I think Niles Morgan has been a fairly inconsistent linebacker at times. Greer Martini has been an inconsistent linebacker at times. I think Coney has probably been the most consistent, wouldn't you say? I mean,
yeah, but I think even
he. So they, all the three linebackers, and I don't know how much Bilal plays, but they have to be. You know, it goes hand in hand with the defensive line. The defensive line has to do its job, and if they do, then the linebackers have come up and fill.
Tim, I know you'll have your pick tomorrow in your preview story, but as far as mine, it's weird because I am fairly confident Notre Dame is going to win the game, but I cannot get over 1-9 in your last 10 games that are one score games. So I have to pick Notre Dame to win by 9 points. So Notre Dame 26, Michigan State 17. Because that trend, it's eventually they'll buck it, but at this point, I cannot pick Notre Dame to win a one score game until they win a one score game, and they haven't done that yet.
Wow!
So I can't pick it. So I'm going Notre Dame 26, Michigan State 17.
Considered. That's interesting. I mean, I think Notre Dame can win this game by 10-14 points. I do. I'm certainly not confident that they will. I look at point spreads, as you know, because I've referenced them every week, and it's open at 4, it went up to 5, I think it's back down to 4. I have a hard time picking Notre Dame covering that, but if I pick a win by a small amount, it goes against your 1-9, which I guess I'm looking at more like this. I can't pick Notre Dame to cover the spread until they go on the road and do something like that. Once they do it, then I'll be inclined to make that pick. Now, I'm not definitely saying I'm going to go in that route, but I do think that, and Notre Dame's a better football team. I mentioned, I think they're a better football team. They're more experienced. I think they're better prepared to win this game, but it's at Michigan State. So I'm not sure where I'm going. I'm quite sure I'm going to pick Notre Dame to win the game. And those are all the things that I'm considering. I'm quite sure I'm going to pick Notre Dame to win the game. And more likely to take the points at Michigan State.
You know what? As we wrap up segment one, the way that we're describing this game reminds me a little bit of when Notre Dame played at Michigan in I think it was 2009. Yeah, it was 2009. I think it was the Tate Forcier game.
Okay.
Like, Notre Dame was clearly, and I think in 2011, Notre Dame was clearly better on both lines, I think, in both of those games, but lost both of them. That's, I think, sort of my, what one of my bits of, like, hesitancy to really, I feel confident about this game.
No, as it should be.
The ability for Notre Dame to assert itself on both lines. Because I think that they have to do that to win the game. And it's been rare that that's happened. I think it happened last week for sure. And I think the sort of complementary football that Notre Dame played offensively and defensively was significant. But to take that on the real road, not the Boston College daytime road, the Michigan State night game road, is that would be a big step up.
I'm still getting used to thinking about Notre Dame defense coached by Elko and how we thought of it before. You know, we've had three good examples of what a defensive coordinator can do for defense, and a lot of the stuff that you talked about in your extra points dealt with that. You know, their nickel defense is, I mean, it's better for a lot of reasons. One certainly is Elko. The other one is Crawford.
Yeah.
You know, I said on the message board, I mean, it's, I understand why Van Gorder didn't have confidence in his nickel coverage without Coleman or without Crawford, but you gotta have one. You gotta come up with, you've gotta have one. You can't just stop using it. So you've got to find the next best thing to Sean Crawford at nickel, who right now is it Julian Love? I don't even, who did they have working as their backup? I mean,
they rarely played it, so it
was, no, but I mean, like in preseason.
I believe it was Julian.
I think it was Julian Love, but I mean, he doesn't have the flat-out speed change of direction that Crawford does. That's why Crawford doesn't play. I mean, why doesn't Crawford play corner if he's so good? Well, he's 5'9" and an eighth, 176 pounds, coming off back-to-back season-ending injuries. It's more important that Sean Crawford plays 13 games at nickel than plays more snaps, you know, at corner, and then, you know, is overtaxed and ends up getting hurt again. They need him on the field for nickel.
Yeah, and that's not a, it's not a situation where he's barely, I don't want people to think that Sean Crawford rarely plays. He has played 84 snaps this year, and then Watkins has played 198, and Love has played 184.
Okay. Well, when you hear it that way, I get the reaction.
But it's not like he's, it's not like Dexter Williams here. Sean Crawford's playing real snaps,
right? And he's a little guy, so having him in on first down run plays, although he is a solid tackler, is not nearly as essential. So I'm veering off into this segment. So we will.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap for segment one. We'll be back for segment two with questions from our readers.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510, or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider, segment two. Questions first from Twitter, and the first one is from Nick Blashill, and he wants to know, do you think we might see a repeat of the 2013 game against Michigan State when Notre Dame basically limits the passing game to throwing fades and hitting everything outside the numbers?
I think we could see some of that, but it's a completely different animal on the back end of the Michigan State defense. That was a great Michigan State defensive backfield. This is not. This is a very inexperienced one. I think you might want to, I mean, I think you want to go downfield to test their safeties and even their corners in man coverage, but I don't think so. I think that will be an aspect of it, but I think more than likely it's going to be the, it's going to be a greater emphasis on the running game, a greater emphasis on the tight ends in the passing game, and maybe some wrinkles that we haven't seen up to this point with RPOs or more jet sweep type stuff.
Well, God, I hope not, because that game was awful.
Yeah, that's a terrible way to watch a game.
There are 474 yards of total offense in that game between the two teams. But I think there are many reasons why I think Notre Dame won't go that route as much. One of them is obviously Brandon Wimbush. But the other one is Josh Adams is your lead running back instead of Cam McDaniel. That's a pretty big upgrade. So I think Notre Dame just has a lot more material to throw at that problem than they did 4 years ago when it was, Cam McDaniel, George Atkinson, Torian Folston.
Well, and who's your quarterback?
Well, and this box score says Thomas Rees.
Well, Thomas Rees can't run it like Brandon Wimbush. So.
No, and it's like even though Notre Dame is down at receiver right now, it was still freshman Will Fuller, who had one catch for 37 yards. TJ Jones really got bottled up, two catches for 15 yards and a score. And the rest of that group just didn't really do anything. But I think that goes more to the secondary of Michigan State than maybe what Notre Dame was throwing out there at receiver, and Michigan State secondary is way down.
You know, I mean, you got to get the ball in St. Brown's hands some way. He's better off when he's running, the intermediate routes that we talked about. But if you can't do that, you got to get the football in his hands somehow, some way. So maybe you bunch receivers to a side and let him duck underneath that so he's got a little bit of interference running, for him on a quick little out to him. I don't know. I've kind of been – I've speculated – every aspect of offense that I could think of since Monday. So somewhere in between lies reality.
Yeah. Well, the St. Brown, what you just brought up sort of leads into the next question. That's from Fighting Irish 17. He wants to know what we think of Alize Mack through three games as he works his way back into the mix.
I don't care about the first two games now. The only thing that matters is the last game, and he played well and he caught the football. The next step is be more physical after the catch. He wasn't right the first two games, but he was much better in the third game. So let's see. Let's pick up from there and see where he goes. I don't think he reverts. My point is I don't think he reverts back to game one and two at this point. But he has to be more physical, and that's one of many tight ends that they can get involved in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting the last two games, he's been targeted 8 times and has 7 catches. You know, St. Brown is the flip side of that. He's been targeted 16 times and has 4 catches. So.
It's a game of percentages, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got to block better when he's in that position too, because he didn't do a real good job of that against BC.
All right, last Twitter question from Kay Covington, and he wants to know, does CJ Sanders have Benjamin Button disease? The kid looked like a player as a freshman and is limited to only cameos, if that.
Yeah, I don't have the specific answer to that other than, why don't certain players play? Why don't receivers play? They don't run the routes at the right depth. They're not precise on what they need to do route-wise, not a good blocker, inconsistent pass catcher, although I don't know that we've necessarily seen any of that, but we hadn't seen Brandon Wimbush being inaccurate throwing the football either based upon practice. So, I mean, I all I can just point to is some of the fundamental things that keep receivers off the field.
Those are all good answers. and I think CJ Sanders, you saw how far down he is the depth chart when he came into the game last week, because it was at the very, very end. He was like basically the last receiver off the bench, which is not something I was expecting from him.
People say like, well, Brian Kelly plays favorites. Well, favorites are developed on the practice field generally,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, so. There's no way around that. I thought he would play more. He hasn't. I don't really know what to make of that at this point. I think I'm trying to scroll through my data here. I mean, he's played on passing plays this year. He's been in for one snap. One.
Unreal.
So you think that a jet sweep, an end around, something.
I mean, that's not just Brian Kelly. That's Delvon Alexander. That's Chip Long. All contributing to that decision. I got to believe that's more on the player than it is the coaching staff.
Right. Yeah, what would I like to see him run most? Sort of a slip screen that Will Fuller did a good job. But Notre Dame doesn't run that play very well right now. So maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, we talk about intermediate routes and, we'll throw slants. Well, if a slant's off target,
yikes,
it's going to be tipped and picked. So, those are, you think of those as shorter routes, and safer routes, but anything thrown over the field when your quarterback's in, over the middle of the field when your quarterback's inaccurate is not good. Question from New One. I'd like to hear commentary on why Wimbush has been struggling throwing the football. Is it physical, the speed of the game too fast, so his mechanics get messed up? Is it psychological without the safety net of the red jersey? Something else? Would love to hear some opinions on this.
I don't think that the red jersey has anything to do with it. I don't think being hit is throwing off his passing game. But I do think mechanically, and I'm not a quarterback coach, but you watch his delivery, you know, his base is a million different ways. To me, it looks like he doesn't repeat the same throwing motion all the time. It's like my golf game. Like, I have a million different swings and the ball goes a million different places. I can't repeat one motion. When I watch him throw the ball, I don't feel like I'm watching a guy repeat one motion over and over again.
That's why I think it's important to give him some more, you know, set drops and let him get his feet set and throw. But I mean, many of the things that are mentioned here, you know how I am when it comes to, it's not one thing, it's a lot of things. It's all those things. It's the speed of the game as it relates to the passing game. You know, it's mechanics. It's getting comfortable being the starter at this level on the road. It's, you know, having to be a large part of the running game. It's a lack of chemistry with your receivers. Everything that you can think of, I can't deny it, other than I agree it's not the red jersey thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that.
We've had some people on our message board ask, like, oh, is this the next Dane Crist where, I mean, you could just see it in his
face.
Did
Dane Crist run for 207 yards and 4 touchdowns?
No.
I don't remember that game.
Just the stress that you remember seeing on Chris' face.
I get that.
I don't see that.
I don't see that with Wimbush either.
Against Georgia, I felt like he got beaten up. I don't think he was like, oh crap, I don't know what I'm doing. But so that's why I say the psychological part, I feel like he's fine. Like, he's pretty even keel kid. Now, Chris off the field was a very even keel guy too. But I just think that Wimbush is handling it okay. It's just more the mechanics and it's the physical, not the mental to me.
I think part of it's mental. I mean, whatever aspect of that is. I mean, I saw a comparison to the Gary Godsey. What?
How? That they're quarterbacks?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the comparison is he's, you know, not a good thrower, and so that's a. But the position on the college level is all encompassing, and it's not just, thank God it's not just throwing.
Yeah.
There's more to it than that. I mean, the threat of Brandon Wimbush as a runner is significant and valuable, especially in the zone option.
I think one of my bigger surprises with that, how things have developed, is people know how much of a threat he is. Like, wouldn't you just overload the box entirely? And at that point, wouldn't you have like a receiver running wide open?
Yeah,
like,
you would think. But and there are also ways to get Josh Adams free within, you know, when a defense is overplaying the quarterback in zone option. So, hey, if it were easy, everybody could do it. It's going to take a little time. I'm not of the group that says he'll never get there. I'm not smart enough to look at what he's done in a handful of games and say, no, he'll never get there. Hell, he's too athletic, I think, just to write him off at this point. And we saw too much accuracy on the practice field.
Right.
That wasn't an accident. So
I think
there's a mental part to it. If he's tied in with mechanics, if he's way off, he's just not settled in yet. We've seen how he can throw the football.
Yeah, because I think the perception of what we saw in August now is like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Whereas really what it should be is like, we've seen it happen before. So that means it can happen again. That what we saw in August is actually a positive opposed to like misrepresentative evidence.
Well, if you don't think that we know what we're talking about, then
there's no way you've made it to this far in this podcast.
Yeah. Thank you. That sounds better than what I was going to say.
WCarry 14, do you think that the Notre Dame staff will possibly script some Wimbush-friendly throws? Brian Kelly mentioned that Wimbush loves that corner route early in the game to see if the passing game can set the tone early.
Yeah, that's why I think, and I think I saw this on the message board, so I don't want to take full credit for it, but you know, bunch a set to one side and let an EQ, for example, duck underneath and take a throw and have a couple guys out there leading the way. That's why I think RPOs, where you have a man set up, to lead the way, and it's just a quick little side throw, a 15, 17-yard throw with some lead blockers in front, and we, you know, ad nauseum. Tight ends.
Yeah, I'll say there's one set that, as I watched the Boston College game, I was like, wow, they really do this a lot. You'll have Alize Mack sort of in the backfield a little bit, and then Wimbush will boot.
In like a wing position.
Yeah, or boot or roll away from Mack, but Mack will sort of follow him across the formation. It's an easy five-yard throw. They must have hit it three
times.
You can
shovel it.
Yeah, BC eventually was like, we'll just put a guy in front of him. But at that point, EQ is running a similar route, 10, 15 yards, whatever, deeper. That's the throw that Wimbush then needs to be able to hit.
I guarantee you, veering off, I guarantee you we're going to see four times minimum of, you know, Michigan State sending the guy in motion. They throw the little pitch little in front of him, so if he drops it, it's incomplete.
Oh, right, yeah.
Got a really speedy guy to do that. But along in that same vein, yeah, I mean, motion him back to Wimbush, and I don't care how you want to get it to him, just get it to him in a short amount of space. Where are we at? Mr. Jack Coffey, beyond his knowledge of Notre Dame, note, did not play under Long's playbook, do you think Tommy Reese, is qualified to be a quarterback coach at a top-tier institution like Notre Dame?
You know, it's a fair question. And I think in normal times, the answer would probably be no. But with the 10th assistants and the desire to hire somebody, the setup with the staff where you really have Long and Kelly as quarterback coach one and two, and then Reese being number three, I understand why they did it. But would Ohio State hire Tom Reese to be quarterback coach next year with no connections there, no understanding? Probably not. At Notre Dame, I mean, you've seen over the years, historically, whether it be Autry Denson or Mike Haywood or Todd Light, they've placed value in an understanding of how Notre Dame works. As a recruiter, as a coach, just as a sounding board for the players. I also think that Reese, as he did when he was a player, is taking way... He shouldn't really barely take any of the blame for what's happened with Wimbush over three games, because Mike Sanford coached Wimbush for 2 years, and it's not like Sanford was just like, oh, everything's fine, like, just do whatever you want to do. Like, they had a really close connection. So it's not like Wimbush is just now getting coaching.
I do think it's a fair question under the circumstances, but I do think that he's qualified. When Tommy Reese was a quarterback at Notre Dame, there's a lot of things you could say about him. Very few of them good pertaining to athleticism, but in terms of knowledge of the system, knowledge of what he was seeing at the line of scrimmage, he was way advanced. He's the son of a coach, and Tommy Reese, that's what made him successful, at least statistically. He put up good stats at Notre Dame because of his knowledge of the game. So I do think he's qualified. I know he's only 24 years old, and that's why, I mean, it is a fair question. And I agree with you that I don't think, you know, I think maybe it's a little misunderstood what the role of the quarterback coach is, especially with him being 24 years old and having Kelly, the guy that's always worked with quarterbacks, and Chip Long as the coordinator. He's more the point man for the quarterback, more the guy that he can go to and say, hey, you know, I didn't understand this. Why, you know, because Kelly and Long have to go on to the next play and coach the next play in practice. So, I mean, I get it. And no, Alabama wouldn't do something like this, but Notre Dame's not Alabama anywhere close in terms of where their program is, so I get that.
I mean, one thing, and this is, I asked Brian Kelly a little bit about this, I think last Thursday, about watching film. So it's something I want to write about, just the time investment guys make.
Right.
And you mentioned quarterbacks really need structure for film viewing.
Who better than
Tom? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's nobody that you would rather have Brandon Wimbush watch film with than Tom Reese there. In terms of understanding protections, where blitzes are coming from, who better than Tommy Reese? I mean, he got sacked 8-9 times, couldn't move. Why was Notre Dame's best pass pro the team with the least athletic quarterback? It's because that guy knew where everything was coming from, and that's a big jump Brandon Wimbush still needs to make.
I thought it was a good hire at the time, and I stand by it for better or worse.
ZC727, do you guys feel that this game falls into the big game category? With Kelly's recent issues with big games being well known, do you feel a blowout win in this game would change that narrative at all?
Let's see, how can I express this? Is it a big game? Yeah! It's a really big game. It is a really, really big game for Brian Kelly and Notre Dame. If you lose, you're 2-2. Even if you win the next two, you're only 4-2. Even if you beat USC, you've got to kind of like make up for that loss earlier in the year against a team that is just not very experienced. It's huge. It's significant. If they win by double digits, which again, I will say, I think that they can do that, it's a huge step forward. A very, very pivotal game to the entire season and perhaps even Brian Kelly long term.
I agree with all that. I think if they win by double digits, it is a lock that they will be 5-1 when USC comes here. I mean, I'd mark it down. That would be a playing well on the road, changing the entire narrative of what's going on around Notre Dame football. So,
Tim JG1987, before the season, staff felt that Irish Illustrated staff felt that safety and defensive tackle were the weakest position groups. After three games, what do you think are now the team's strongest and weakest position groups?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I still think that safety is a weak position group, and I still think that defensive tackle is a weak position group, which is different than saying it's a sieve or it's a disaster or there's no way they can play a good defense. Both those positions have been surprisingly good. I think that if there was a position group that maybe I overrated or under... Well, I'll say I underrated those positions about how good they were, but I still don't think they're better than like linebacker or cornerback or defensive end. Wide receiver, I was skeptical about before the season started, probably more than just about everybody. That still has been a surprise for me about how poorly played. Okay. And then I would say overall tight end, I think has been good. I guess I have a hard time getting a read of like what they want that position to do, be, and all those kinds of things.
There are a lot of facets to it, no doubt about it. Well, let me, I think defensive tackle has come together. This isn't the exact question, but defensive tackle has come together better than safety has because they can play four guys. Whereas at safety, I mean, I feel pretty good about the progress that Studstill's making and Coleman are making. But beyond that, I don't think anybody feels good about Jalen Elliott being on the field right now. And Isaiah Robertson really hasn't been put in that position.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. It's like, I would say that Myron Tagovailoa, Amosa, and Kurt Heinisch have been real surprises for me because I thought they would just be like the basketball equivalent of a guy you put in to just pick up a foul.
Yeah,
and they've been productive. I mean, Myron in particular has had last week of the fourth down stop got penetration, and it was obvious enough to everybody that multiple veteran guys mentioned him by name without being asked during the week. Like, hey, this guy's really good. So that's. Some of the younger guys have impressed me more than I was expecting. And I agree with you on Sudsill. I think he's improved a lot. Coleman is, Coleman, I think, fit into the category of, okay, great spring practice. We'll see. Well, we've seen. He's been really good.
Warning sign, they haven't faced a great quarterback yet. Yeah. I mean, they haven't.
Until October.
They really haven't. They haven't been challenged. I think, what's the best unit? I think... There's been inconsistency with the linebacker play, but all three have played well at, very well at times, I think. Coney's played the best, I think, and played the most consistent. I'm not sure what the coaching staff feels about that. Maybe Niles Morgan would be there, but I think Niles Morgan's been a little inconsistent. There isn't any unit right now where I'm saying, wow, this unit is great. Running back, I guess, has been very, very productive. And certainly in two of the three games, the offensive line was destroying the opposition over the course of four quarters.
Yeah, well, we will learn a lot Saturday night at Michigan State as the competition ramps back up, maybe not to a Georgia level, but certainly superior to Temple and Boston College, and we will be there for pregame instant analysis, before the game, postgame instant analysis, grades, columns, game stories, features, all that good stuff. You can catch it all on irishillustrated.com, and we will talk to you next week, Monday, as we return to a regularly scheduled program with Tim O'Malley, Tim Priester, and Pete Sampson for our next Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. Thanks for listening.